Chapter 42.
Travel through the five-point system was tedious. A series of short jumps as they zigzagged to avoid the space debris that littered the entire system. What should have been a quick journey was drawn out at an excruciatingly slow pace. It was 3 days before Mathy and the boys let her go into the cargo hold. The boys hung back near the stairs, watching as Mathy led Jin into the hold. There were 7 cells, with 2 or 3 people in each one, despite the fact that the cells were about half the size of Jin's room. One bucket of water with a ladle hanging from the side stood near each door. Jin covered her mouth.
"Yeah, the smell's the worst," Mathy conceded.
He had been warming to Jin over the past few days.
"We're going to have to wash the floor with halyol acid to clear out the stink."
The slaves had been trying to keep their areas clean, but the only thing in each cell was the bucket, and they couldn't defecate there.
"Why not just let them go to the restroom?" Jin asked.
Mathy snorted.
"Ain't none of us have time to escort 'em," he sneered. "You volunteering?"
Jin's eyes watered at the stench, but she shook her head.
"Don't show emotion," she ordered herself.
Jin had read over all the ident pads, and she knew that most of the slaves were young, between the ages of 7 and 11. There was a difference, though, between reading names and numbers and seeing their faces. The 5 adult slaves were all women, and from the way they reached for the children through the bars, Jin suspected that most of them were the children's mothers. None of them had similar surnames, but names meant nothing. Jin knew that. Mathy picked up a short stick that had been plugged into the wall. Jin noticed that the nearby prisoners all scooted away as soon as he touched it, and she looked at it closer.
"Stun prod," he said, slapping it in his palm. "Don't kill 'em, but gives 'em a buzz."
He drew the last word out, widening his eyes in a way that made him look mad. He lunged at one cell holding 3 children, and the little girl inside screamed and scrambled to the back wall, slipping on the filth covering the floor. He laughed. He had only meant to get a reaction out of her, and it had worked.
"Leave her alone!"
one of the women roared, straining to reach through the bars.
"I'll kill you!"
she choked out, her face turning purple with rage. Mathy turned, hate in his eyes, and Jin stepped forward. She stood directly in front of the woman, but far enough away that her fingers couldn't quite grasp Jin.
"I was raised by a man who taught me to fight," Jin said. "He was the strongest person I ever knew, and he'd never let anyone hurt me. You know what my most important lesson was?"
The entire hold was silent. Even the children. The woman shook her head.
"No,"
she whispered.
"Don't start a fight. You can't win."
Jin turned on her heel and left the cargo hold. The boys howled at the woman, rattling the bars of her cage, laughing at her screams. That night, Jin started cooking.
"This slop is disgusting," she said. "I don't know much, but I can do better than this. For starters, let me introduce you to salt."
Captain laughed, pleased with the variety, and the boys in general eased up around Jin.
"You don't seem like the kind to cook," Captain said.
Jin stared down at the pot of boiling water. Her mother would have taught her to cook, but Jin had been too young to retain any recipes. Saw hadn't cared about food as anything more than a means of sustenance. Everything she knew about cooking, she knew from Hatter, from watching him toss spices into bubbling pans, her eyes glued to his quick hands as they chopped through glick before sending the white bits skidding through sizzling oil.
"How much longer is this journey?"
she asked in a low voice.
"Eager to be off my ship?" Captain said.
"Yes." Jin let the simplicity of her word show the honesty behind it. Captain pressed his lips together and nodded.
3 more days, he said. How's the forgery going?
Jin looked him right in the eyes. Almost done, she said.
Two days later, and the boys were getting antsy. They kept going down to the cargo hold for entertainment, taunting the slaves by eating in front of them or jeering insults. Jin prepared a feast for them all.
Our last full day together, Jin said.
The ship was already in sight of Rumitaka. They'd dock by the next morning. I've got a feeling that as soon as we land, you're hightailing out of here, Captain said.
You're not wrong, Jin said.
She was eager to pretend this job had never happened. She put the food she'd made in the center of the table, and the boys started fighting over the bread.
What's that? Mathy asked as Jin turned around.
She held the stun prod, the one Captain had taken away from the cargo hold.
I've not seen one like this before,
she mused. Her thumb pressed the trigger, and electricity crackled at the end. Captain shrugged.
Mostly harmless, he said.
Mostly, Jin agreed,
and she pressed the end of the stun prod to Captain's skull. His eyes widened, and his teeth chattered involuntarily. Then he slumped to the table, knocked out cold.
Hey!
Mathy shouted, throwing his chair back and lunging for Jin. She tossed the stun prod to her left hand, rammed it into Mathy's stomach, and with her right hand, withdrew the truncheon she'd secured to her back. As Mathy doubled over in pain, she walloped him in the back of his head with the truncheon, and he dropped like a stone.
The boys were stupid. They could have run, but instead they tried to fight Jin at the same time. It took her only minutes to knock them out.
Messy,
Jin complained, dragging Captain up out of the bowl of gravy. She held both his arms and dragged him down the ship's length. She opened the airlock chamber door and dumped his body on the floor, then went back for the others. As soon as all the men were inside the chamber, she locked the pressurized door, but she didn't release the hatch. They would wake soon, but Jin made sure the lock was sealed, and they were trapped in the chamber. Jin went straight to the cargo hold. The slaves inside were too weak to stand. They had lived on little more than water and the occasional ration cube for a week. Jin sat down at the cage holding the mother she'd spoken to a few days before.
Why did you sell your children into slavery? She asked. I didn't, she said.
She scowled at Jin, but was too tired to censor herself.
Loros and Ephod were born while I served Paso. Olin became mine after his mother died.
And you?
Jin asked the other women. They all confirmed. Their children were born into slavery. And they had all taken extended contracts with Alejandro Paso in an effort to buy their own and their children's freedom. Paso's deal was to set them up on Rumitaka at the end of their service. Instead, as soon as they'd boarded the Amaril's class freighter, Captain and Mathy had pushed them into cages, mocking them for their stupidity in trusting the gambling lord. Jin stood after she finished speaking to the last woman. She moved to the end of the hall and set the all-release button. The cage doors opened simultaneously.
You're letting us go?
The mother who'd tried to fight Mathy asked.
Come with me, Jin said.
To the other women, she added,
there's food in the mess hall. Eat as much as you want.
They nodded and then led the children up the stairs.
I know you're hungry, she told the woman. This won't take long. As long as the children eat.
What's your name? Jin asked.
Anjin, she said.
Jin recalled her ident pad. She'd known this woman had to be one of the 5 adult idents she had.
I was hired to alter your contracts, Jin said,
leading Anjin to her room.
I know, she growled. That one man, he laughed about it. How dumb we were to fall for that plan. To trust a contract from Alejandro Paso.
Jin opened her door, and Anjin followed her inside. All 20 of the ident pads were stacked neatly on the bed. Jin picked them up and handed them to the woman. "I didn't alter them," she said. "The contracts are free and clear. Don't lose these." Before the woman could say anything, Jin led her back down the hall. Behind them, they could hear the other women and children eating, their hunger all-consuming. Anjin looked as if she wanted to join them, but Jin was almost done.
"Where are you taking us?"
Anjin asked, suspicion in her voice.
"Nowhere. I'm leaving. I suggest you go elsewhere. The Empire's waiting for you on Rumitaka."
Anjin looked confused, so Jin added,
"There's a shuttle. I'm taking it. You can have the ship." "What about—"
Anjin started, but Jin stopped in front of the airlock. Anjin stared through the porthole window, her eyes widening. Captain and Mathy were almost lucid now. The boys, at least, were awake.
"Let us out!" Mathy shouted.
"If we land on Rumitaka with these men as prisoners, they'll blame us," Anjin said. "Our contracts don't run out until tomorrow. We're technically still slaves until then. We'll be put on trial for revolting against our masters."
Jin put her hand next to the release switch. Anjin's eyes fell to the large red handle. Jin had already set up the airlock. All the safety measures were overridden. All it would take was for the handle to be pulled down. And the four men who had locked up Anjin and her family on the slave ship for a solid week to rot in their own filth with less food than they could live on would be shot into the blackness of space. "So," Jin said, once she was sure Anjin had seen the release handle, "I'm taking the shuttle. I'm also taking the credits I was paid. You may want to check Captain's quarters. There may be more for you. Or you could sell the ship, I don't care, but I'm leaving." Anjin stared at the porthole. The men had realized what the women were looking at. They were all too aware of the big red handle.
"Please don't go," Anjin said softly. "I've been a slave since I was a teenager. I don't know what to do. We could be your crew. We could take the ship and go anywhere."
"No," Jin said simply. She turned around and headed toward the shuttle. It wasn't much, about the same size as the Planet Hopper, and fortunately it had similar controls. Jin was no pilot. She couldn't have stolen the freighter if she'd wanted to, but she knew she could at least land the shuttle on Rumitaka. It was a straight shot with autopilot engaged. Jin had disconnected from the freighter in a matter of minutes, pulling away from the larger ship. She watched as it soared toward Rumitaka, the planet barely in view. And she watched as the airlock opened and four men drifted out into space.